From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com.
Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week, my guest is Eric Hilton from the DC-based dub and down-tempo DJ duo Thievery Corporation. Hilton has been DJing in the capital city for 2 decades, and along with his partner Rob Garza and label mates at 18th Street Lounge Music, he's at the epicenter of the city's electronic music scene. He recently wrote and directed Babylon Central, a movie dealing with corruption, oil, and the dirty politics of his hometown. It's out now on DVD. Let's get to the interview. First of all, let's get into your musical background. Did you grow up playing instruments?
I did grow up playing a very little bit of guitar in kind of like punk bands, just like 3-chord rock and roll, you know, real simple. That's about it, really, though. I mean, I could just like hammer out a pretty simple song on the guitar. And mostly I was a DJ in like right after college and DJed for several years, and I've kind of been doing it ever since.
How did you get into electronic music? And when you did first get into it, was it sort of the loungy, down-tempo music that you're known for? Or well, tell me what sort it was at first.
Well, when I first started DJing, I was playing like totally different music, like kind of mod and soul and stuff like that. And then someone hired me to be like a house music DJ at this big club in D.C., so all of a sudden I was playing lots of that day's electronic music, which was pretty much house music and kind of techno and stuff.
Was that the sort of music that was popular in D.C., or was it just coming in? What was the sort of electronic scene like in D.C. at the time?
There wasn't, to my knowledge, not much of an electronic scene until, you know, early 90s, like mid-90s, when Thievery Corporation and Thunderball and Deep Dish and a few others formed, but you know, it really wasn't an electronic music city at that point. And you know, we got into electronic music primarily because we really liked the kind of trip hop thing that was going on and some of the Japanese stuff that was coming out, like Silent Poet, things like that.
How did you make the leap from strictly DJing to going ahead and producing your own music?
Interesting leap. It's one of those things where you feel like I could do that, you know. You listen to enough songs and you realize, well, you know, I could come up with a good bass line, and, you know, I know which beats I like and melodies, and so, you know, you do it, and your first few times aren't your best, but you keep doing it and you get better and you learn, you know, how to improve upon your productions, and you just keep going.
And the early stuff you were making, was it along those same lines as the stuff you were DJing, the house of the time, or like you said, some of this new interesting stuff that you were hearing maybe out of Japan or from other members of the scene?
Well, I made some pretty obscure records before Thievery Corporation, like an Exodus Quartet record, which was very kind of sort of early 90s or like 1990 era acid jazz, like, you know, which is a horrible term, but basically like, you know, kind of cut up jazz that's influenced by many different eras, like 60s and 70s funk and some, you know, Latin stuff. And I produced a hip-hop record, which definitely was sort of a jazz hip-hop record, mm-hmm. called Peace Bureau, which that was another, you know, early attempt. And then Rob and I met, and we started doing Thievery Corporation, and that was kind of it. After that, I was, you know, stuck on that sound.
Can you elaborate on that bit? Tell me how you met Rob Garza and how you started working together.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. A friend brought him into 18th Street Lounge that had just opened, and you know, we met, we were introduced, we talked, and we were talking about bossa nova and Brazilian music, and he was really into Brazilian music at that time. And we decided, well, my friend had intended for us to start making music together in his apartment studio. And I think the friend wanted to be involved, but the friend never showed up, so we were actually recording in this guy's apartment for the first month, and we decided to move the setup to the lounge and continue, and, you know, we just had a really good chemistry together, we still do.
Don't switch the dial. I said, do not switch the dial. This is a test of the Thievery Corporation on radio. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Whoa, now we're gonna wake up the nation.
Thievery Corporation with Radio Retaliation right here on the UNTS podcast. I wonder, with the two DJ format, how are roles defined as far as assembling a track between the two of you?
We're generally interchangeable in what we do, but I tend to be more of the beats and bass guy, and he tends to be more of the melodies and lyrics guy. So that is usually how it goes, but sometimes it flips. So we're a pretty good yin and yang, though. So I think that's very important whenever you have any kind of creative partnership, is that you don't really have the same skill set.
Right. Does he have more of a theoretical background? Is he bringing maybe more compositional aspects of the music into it, and you're more raw, you know, beats and bass?
I would say that Rob, for the most part, if you had to, you know, splice the hairs, you'd say that he has a better musical knowledge, and I might, like, be more of, like, the grooves person, so...
You know what sounds good.
Generally, I'm picking the beat and lacing the beats together and playing the bass, so I'm sort of like a foundational thing, and then he's kind of into keyboards, and he's a better keyboard player than me by far. And, you know, he'll play more of the guitar than I'll play. I can play guitar, but he plays probably better than me. Mm-hmm. And then Rob really likes to write lyrics, so he's definitely a good lyricist. Sometimes I might end up writing all the lyrics for a song and vice versa, but more often than not, he's the one writing the lyrics.
That's interesting. I want to ask about that. You've got a lot of impressive guest musicians all over your albums. How involved are they in the creative process? Let's say a Wayne Coyne or a David Byrne is coming in to record a track. Do you hand them lyrics and say, go to the vocal booth, or do you bring them into your process?
Well, you know, that was kind of an interesting time when you collaborated with Wayne Coyne, the Flaming Lips, and David Byrne, and Perry Farrell. We had to basically through the internet, which was insane. Like, we basically upload our instrumental, and they would take the instrumental into their studio and cut vocals, and then they would upload their vocals, you know, in 44.1K files, and then we would take their vocal, drop it in, edit, EQ, the delays, reverbs, anything we wanted to hear on it, and mix it, and play it for them. If they were cool, that, you know, with it, then we'd wrap it up. And so it was a very strange kind of long-distance collaboration where we just cut on the phone from time to time and talked it through, but we didn't work in the same studio.
Okay. Your music is incredibly political. Is that just the nature of the type of music you're playing? A lot of dub, a lot of reggae has that sort of political vibe, or have you always been something of an activist?
I think we feel like we are paying attention to, you know, what's going on in the world, and we're very curious people, and, you know, that definitely will play into some of our lyrics. But we also are very inspired by some of the same bands, like The Clash. Same, you know, Rob and I have some of the same influences. Like, The Clash is probably his favorite band and my favorite band as well. And we grew up on the DC hardcore scene, like Bad Brains and Minor Threat and Fugazi, and, you know, these are just, you know, bands that had something to say, and they said it, and that always interested us, that they were completely unedited and, you know, felt free to say what they wanted. And I guess because they were, you know, well, apart from The Clash, they were independent groups. The Clash were not. But I don't think people even really knew what Jess Tremor was talking about.
That's interesting. A lot of what influenced The Clash was sort of this... a lot of reggae and a lot of political music and a lot of this other stuff in it, and it seems to be influencing you in the same way, and you cast a very wide net, Thievery Corporation does, with the music as far as its stylistic aspects are concerned, dub and world beat, down tempo. What are you currently listening to that's sort of feeding those creative pathways?
I'm still listening to a lot of reggae these days, but also, you know, rock and old soul and, you know, just a lot of older music, really. I'm a big fan of Curtis Mayfield. You know, that's one of the guys I'll just go back to a lot. A lot of Jamaican singers like Dennis Brown and Gregory Isaacs. And I like really passionate, you know, soulful lyrics, and, you know, kind of just tend to, you know, listen to a lot of Jamaican and American soul.
Your popularity has exploded over the past decade. You opened for Paul McCartney at FedEx Field. You're at the epicenter of this scene in D.C. To what do you think you can attribute this mass appeal of your music? Do you think it's because you are so rooted in these styles that really have caught people in their era? If you're talking about Curtis Mayfield, if you're talking about Gregory Isaacs, if you're talking about The Clash, is it because you feel like you're rooted in this music that for decades now has gripped people and really spoken to them?
I think so. I mean, for us, we just have pretty high goals, big goals, and we hold ourselves to kind of a high standard. I mean, we're never really that impressed with our own music, you know. I mean, we don't feel like, you know, we need to get better and we want to get better at what we do. And when you listen to a guy like Curtis Mayfield or, you know, some of the Marvin Gaye stuff, like So What's Going On record, which of course is, I mean, I don't know how anyone could make a better record. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're comparing yourself to the best, it's pretty humbling.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna be wrong. It's gonna feel
Marching the Hate Machines off Thievery Corporation's Cosmic Game album with vocals from Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips. Now tell me a little bit about 18th Street Lounge Music, your record label. I was speaking with a collaborator of yours, a sitarist, Rob Myers, and he was speaking about DC musicians and how they feel it's their God-given right to start a label. How active are you with it, and where did that label come from, first of all?
Well, you know, the label, I think, was in the beginning just a vehicle for us to get Thievery record released, and we just didn't want to sign to another label. We felt like the Discord model that was established in D.C. was the right way to go. And mm-hmm. there were a lot of indie rock labels at that time. You had Discord, you had Simple Machines, maybe, Teen Beat, and several others. And it was just kind of an interesting time in music where people were able to somehow secure distribution and release small quantities of obscure records, but still kind of make a living. And that's what we wanted to do, and I'm glad we kept our independence because, you know, through the early years, it was the right thing to do, and, I mean, now it's clearly the right thing to do, so. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of work, too. You know, you got to have sort of your right brain and your left brain working.
Yeah, I'm wondering, what role do you play with the label? Are you out there looking for artists that you want to sign, or are you doing stuff on the back end, getting your current roster out there and pushing out albums and producing?
We have a good staff of people, and we basically let them kind of drive the bus for the most part. But in terms of signings, that will always be me and Rob who make that decision. And, you know, we have to like the music enough to sign the artist. And, you know, just something that's interesting to us. You know, like a recent signing is the Ancient Astronauts. They sent us a record, and we had known those guys for a while, and it was just a really solid record. And we're like, this is worth releasing. And, you know, sure enough, it did quite well. So it can come from anywhere. You know, I mean, we have some new artists on the label now that we're actually creating ourselves. Like, I'm doing this vintage reggae project that's kind of different for ESL because it's not really electronic, but mm-hmm. still think it'll fit, you know, within the roster.
What's up, everybody? Yeah, this is the Far Side, you know what I'm saying? With the Ancient Astronauts. U.S. to Germany, that's how we doing it right now. Y'all hold on to your hats. You know how we do.
Classic from Ancient Astronauts featuring Far Side. Let's wrap up my interview with Eric Hilton. Let's switch gears and discuss your film, Babylon Central, which is out now on DVD. You co-wrote and directed this movie with all your various musical collaborations and the label and touring with Thievery. How did you find time to write, let alone produce and edit?
Yeah, well, I guess in a way, in retrospect, I was pretty fortunate to have some free time then. I didn't want the free time when it happened. It was 2006, and mm-hmm. Rob was, he was recording a solo project called Dust Galaxy, and it was just a very long hiatus for Thievery Corporation, and frankly, I was kind of bored, so I figured, all right, well, I'm going to do something I always wanted to do, you know, because I have the time. And yeah, I wrote a script quickly in like 3 days, believe it or not. It was insane. It was sort of like a moment of madness. Mm-hmm. And showed it to Phil Hawken at the label, and he edited the script with me, and we moved forward. We hired, you know, actors who were basically friends from down the street, you know, mm-hmm. people we knew just around the way, kind of. And, you know, we knew a guy who made documentary films and had decent enough equipment, and he shot, you know, the movie with another shooter, Sam Stewart, and just a two-camera shoot, you know, $50,000 budget, and a lot of, you know, sweat along the way. And it was a lot of fun. Shooting it was the most fun by far. But then, unfortunately, had to get into the editing, and that was incredibly laborious.
I can imagine. Now, can you tell me a bit about the story and maybe the inspiration behind it?
Sure. Yeah, the story is really inspired by just my time in D.C. and a lot of things that I've seen and experienced and people that I've met. And it's also about D.C. itself and kind of the complexity of the city and sort of the undercurrent that you kind of know is there. But there's a lot of sort of, I don't know, kind of cultural subtext in D.C. that a lot of people wouldn't really, you know, be aware of if they're not from here. It's kind of an odd city.
I would agree. I mean, D.C. seems to be so central to everything you do. The city plays a big role in your music, and it's almost like a character itself in the film.
Yeah, well, there's just a lot of really good things about the city, and then there's some not-so-good things. And, you know, the good things are that it's extremely multicultural. A lot of people, most of the people here are very open-minded. You know, it's a beautiful city. The bad things are it's very, very small, so you get kind of, you get almost like island fever, you know, you gotta gotta leave from time to time. But and of course there's the politics, you know, that's definitely not one of the better things about D.C. But then again, it wouldn't exist without this, you know, without that governmental component. But, you know, meeting people in politics is usually not a very fun thing.
And yet you get asked to do so many gigs, or you put them together yourself, or it's just the nature of the scene to be very actively involved in and around D.C.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do like benefit gigs, and we've definitely done work for the UN World Food Program, and it's, you know, something that, you know, it's just the right thing to do, and, you know, you just feel compelled to do it. Again, I think we're just following in the footsteps of guys like Ian MacKay, who I strangely see almost every day. He lives about 5 blocks from me, so we see each other all the time. But, you know, he's kind of a childhood idol of mine, and
right.
You know, he did tons of benefits with Fugazi and Minor Threat, and it's just a, you know, just a feels right to do.
And the soundtrack is chock full of special guests in addition to Thievery tracks?
It is, yeah. We have some really kind of high-profile tracks, like older cuts from a Jamaican scene, like I Chase the Devil by Max Romeo, a classic, really great old kind of rare soul song called Hang On In There by Mike James Kirkland. A very rare 10-inch release called Light It Up by Easy Wayne, or I forget the name. They're from Sweden, of all places, but it's this really awesome, like, kind of roots reggae cut. We have easy listening tunes on there from, like, Dorothy Ashby from the Argo Cadet catalog. Tony Hatch is also, like, an easy listening artist. And then we have Bad Brains, you know, so it kind of runs the gamut, you know. I mean, but at the same time, it's a very mellow soundtrack. And, yeah, the film itself is fairly mellow, so I feel like the soundtrack is kind of what it needs to be.
Alrighty. Eric Hilton, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast.
All right, well, it's my pleasure.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. I'd like to thank Phil Hawken and Will Griffin with ESL Music, and of course my guest Eric Hilton of Thievery Corporation. His movie Babylon Central is out now on DVD. Enter a contest to win a copy of the movie, as well as the soundtrack and an autographed movie poster at theUNS.com. Next week on the UNS podcast, Preston Walker and Henry Allen of Virtual Boy are my guests. These SoCal DJs released their Omega Supreme EP just last month on 1320 Records. Remember to visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the show, or you'd like to be a guest on the program, contact me at Anand@theunst.com. Catch you next week.